Smith Stevedore and Company. Ms. Post.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Christy Post. I'm with the Blake Jones Law Firm. I'm here to talk about my client, Mr. Johnson's case, and the applicability of the court's recent ruling in the Sanchez matter, and how the district court, we believe, misapplied it in the context of Mr. Johnson's case. Mr. Johnson is a person who performs traditionally longshore type activity work. However, he does so and did so for Cooper for many, many years in a midstream context. Now, that's very different from the dockside type of work that was being performed in the Sanchez case. The function and mission of the America, which is the vessel that he was working on that's owned by Cooper, is to sit midstream so that barges coming from upriver can be offloaded onto ships going out to sea to facilitate the movement of cargo for Cooper in terms of to expedite that, and for his customers to facilitate the movement of their cargo without having to go dockside, as they formerly did and some still do. So Mr. Johnson every day would be taken from the dock, transported by crew boat, to the America. From there, he would be told which barges were being unloaded to which ships on that particular day. And Mr. Johnson did this for Cooper for a period of almost 20 years. Cooper alleges that because he was hired out of the union hall, that he's a longshore worker, and that his employment was terminated every single day, and that he would be rehired the following day. So over 20 years, if you do the math, that's over 7,000 times being hired and fired. The function and mission of the America, as I just alluded to, is to transfer cargo. Now, in doing so, Mr. Johnson's work is that he would get onto the barges, he would assist the crane operator from the America to hook up rigging to the covers. They pick up these large covers, place them on the America, and then they lower equipment down into the holds of the barges, and workers like Mr. Johnson would go in there and move this bulk cargo with front loaders and other equipment to get it all out of the holds to move it into the ships. When they were completed, those particular jobs, they would then have to raise the equipment and remove everything from the hatches and replace the covers. So Mr. Johnson's injury took place when they had completed the removal of the cargo, and they climbed up, he and another gentleman, out of the hold, and they had to remove a large aluminum extension type ladder that was part of the equipment, as was all the rest of this, of the America, Cooper's vessel. And in doing so, they had to raise this ladder up over their heads to place it in a notch on the America. At that point, Mr. Johnson lost his balance and fell and suffered some very severe injuries, to which now, almost 5 years later, he's never been able to return to work. So when you move a traditionally dockside operation where longshore activities are taking place.
Let me move you a little bit further on the needle.
Yes, Your Honor.
This is a summary judgment case, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, how does the posture of the case help us, you know, apply the Sanchez factors, or said differently, is this case turning on the facts, or is it turning on, you know, how we apply Sanchez to these facts, or is it a mixture? That's one question. And then secondly, the district court made some facts in favor of your client, and then that question would be, is it enough just your client's deposition factually to push back against, you know, the other view of it, or was more needed? Is there more available, or is what the record is the record is? I know that's a convoluted way to ask your question, but I'm trying to just move you into the stream, no pun intended, on, you know, where the tension looks to be.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's an excellent point. And I think that what the district court did was, from the very get-go, misapplied Sanchez, because I think the district judge, in finding or buying into the appellee's argument that Mr. Johnson was attached to all these other customers' vessels rather than to the America, is where the basic problem began in this particular decision. So in finding that there's no proof he was a crew member of the America or more or less permanently assigned to the America is where I believe you start with the process. And there was ample information, evidence in the deposition that he went to the America every day. He performed operations using its appurtenances. I don't think that it's conceivable to believe that he's not just as much a person who is furthering the function and mission of the America as anyone else, say a crane operator. He's acting as a flagman. He's performing the actual function or mission of the America, which is to move cargo just as much as any other captain or anyone else, perhaps even more so, in my opinion. And then if you look at that, that's where the whole problem began in the district court's opinion. So the district court failed to recognize this man's connection to the America itself, and instead bought into Cooper's argument that he's being attached each day to multiple vessels in furtherance of their missions. I don't see how that's even possible. There's no real evidence of that. It's simply an argument that was made by Cooper's counsel.
Who picked him up every day?
Cooper. Cooper picked him up. He was hired out of the Longshore Hall. He reported dockside, and he was taken by Cooper every day to and from their vessel, the America. And there's no proof that they had any arrangement with any of these customers, either the barge owners or the seagoing ships, to assign workers to work in their employ. There's simply no evidence of this. The barges that are coming in, they don't even have a crew. The seagoing ships do, but the barges do not. So that's part of the whole problem. And if you go further along in Sanchez, so first of all, you know, does the worker owe allegiance to a vessel or a shoreside employer? In this case, they're one and the same, because the vessel is the America. The vessel in question that he's attached to is not all of these other things that are coming and going. The America is constant. Mr. Johnson is a constant. The ships and the barges come and go, day in and day out. They change. The customers change. The employers change. The one thing that doesn't change is that that's the vessel he's going to every single day. So that's kind of where the district court started. And then when they got into the sea-based activity and finding that it was he was performing discrete activities to these other vessels and the connection ends. He never has a connection to the other vessels. That's the whole point. His connection is to the America. He is a crew member. You can call him a longshoreman or say that he did traditional longshoreman work, but the fact of the matter is he's assigned to a vessel, and they cannot, by virtue of the fact that they have some arrangement through a collective bargaining agreement with the longshore union, make up their mind that legally he's going to be determined a Jones Act seaman. That's for this court to decide.
What's the quality of the summary judgment evidence on the point you're making?
Well, in Mr. Johnson's deposition, he testified that he was always taken by crew boat to the vessel day after day after day, and that he performed all of his work at the direction of Cooper employees. They focused in their argument, and the district court seemed to focus on the fact that he said he was a longshoreman. He identified as a longshoreman. He said he was a member of the union. All of those things are true, but when an employer takes the very essence and the location of where that work is being performed, and they, for their own benefit, transfer those workers from a shoreside environment to a maritime environment over water, then they're changing the character of the employment itself.
Was there other evidence from Cooper's side that supports Mr. Johnson's deposition?
Well, their own affidavits that they submitted, they agreed that the America's a vessel. I don't think there's any dispute that he went there every day. What they claim is that he simply was going there to receive assignments of which vessels to go to. But there's really no option of which vessels to go to because you have a barge being unloaded and a ship being loaded. If you were simply going to assignments to some other vessels that weren't attached to the America, that could be done from shoreside. So he's really working off the America. He's using the America's equipment. All of the front loaders and dozers and ladders and the cranes used and everything else are all on the America. They are all appurtenances of the America, and that's the equipment he's using.
What would we be holding, that the district court construed that evidence against the non-movement? I'm still in my summary judgment mindset, you know, as opposed to this having been a trial, you know, so I'm just trying to take what you're saying and put it in the summary judgment category. Your argument that the district court construed the evidence on this point against the non-movement, that's the basis of the error, or what? Just trying to understand, you know, whether you're arguing.
Yes, Your Honor.
On the facts or what? So.
Yes, on the facts, he's clearly attached to the America. To buy into this convoluted argument that he is hired and fired every day and assigned to or employed by all of these different customers day after day after day is just an implausible argument. And I'm not sure why the court didn't find that. The court said that we failed to prove the duration element, that he didn't work more than 30% of his time on vessels. But by the very nature of the midstream context of the work that he was performing 100% of his work in a maritime context on a vessel. The problem is that the district court was looking at it in terms of all of the customers' vessels and not the actual vessel that he was attached to. We think it was very clear on the record that that is his employer's vessel, that's who he was working for, and that's where he went every single day in and day out. It's no different than if you take a cook from a restaurant. A cook cooking in a restaurant on land is a land-based employee. But if you hire that cook and you put him out on the America and he's cooking out there, well, he's not a land-based employee anymore. He may be doing the same work that he did on land, but now he's a maritime worker. And in that case, attached to a vessel, he's the Jones Act seaman. And it's no different for Mr. Johnson, who is a traditional land-based type worker, because most longshore work is done in a land-based context, dockside. And you transfer, if you will, you're bringing the dock to the middle of the river, which is what is done in midstream operations, by putting a vessel in the middle of the river to perform the same function that the dock would serve if it were dockside. But when you expose those workers and you move them into that context, you're taking them from one status and placing them into another, from a longshoreman job into a Jones Act seaman job. So that's basically our argument. I have about a minute left, but I'll unless the court has any other questions.
What's your best case post-Sanchez of where your client fits in to your argument?
Well, I think that he fits in. One of the other issues when I read Sanchez, and I'm not quite sure the court's why Sanchez was a case that was picked by the court, because to me it seemed very clear that he did not fit the definition. But tweaking the nature element of Chandris the way that the court did in Sanchez, I'm not sure the sea-based or involving seagoing activity, how close, you know, are we getting with these dockside type employees? You know, is the court overruling the Endeavor Marine and NACAN cases where the court recognized that exposure to the Mississippi River is perils of the sea, and that the court rejected the assumption that...
So So your best case is?
My best case is that my guy is a seaman because he's connected to the America.
Let me ask, because what you said confused me a little bit. Without Sanchez, where would you be?
I think my client is clearly a Jones Act seaman without Sanchez.
Okay. So your best case is pre-Sanchez?
Yes. And I believe post-Sanchez, he still should be a Jones Act seaman. I think that the failure or the disconnect in this case was the district court looking at my client, not in terms of his connection with the America, his employer's vessel, but with all of the vessels that come and go day in and day out. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Jason Wagasback, Galloway, Johnson, Tompkins, Burns, Smith, on behalf of the appellee, Cooper, T. Smith, Stevedore & Company. The district court in this case, in granting summary judgment in favor of Cooper on the appellant's Jones Act status and 905B claims, emphasized over and over again the appellant's failure to come forward with any evidence whatsoever to support his arguments on either claim. The appellant has the burden of proof on both of these claims, and it was his duty to satisfy that burden with evidence produced in response to the defendant's motion for summary judgment. He did not do so. This lack of evidence comes in spite of the fact that the case was pending for over a year before Cooper filed his motion for summary judgment, and the trial was set to go in a little over a month when summary judgment was entered. There was ample time for the plaintiff to develop evidence to support his arguments on both Jones Act status and 905B, but he was never able to develop the evidence because it simply is not there. He has no evidence in the record to support his arguments that the district court was incorrect. There's argument, to be sure, but there's no evidence. This court has repeatedly held that a party moving for summary judgment may satisfy his burden by merely pointing out that the evidence in the record is insufficient with respect to an essential part of the non-moving party's claim on which the non-moving party has the burden of proof at trial.
Why isn't his deposition sufficient for summary judgment purposes in terms of, you know, teeing up this issue of the various issues?
It's absolutely sufficient, Your Honor. The problem for the appellant is that his summary judgment testimony supports the fact that he's not a Jones Act seaman. And I'll address that in just a minute. But no, the deposition is ample evidence. And in fact, that was what the district court was looking at, the plaintiff's deposition and the declaration of James Gautreaux submitted by Cooper. And in looking at both those things, the district court found, and by the way, the entire deposition transcript is in the record. So the court had the entire testimony of the plaintiff. And the district court said it was wholly insufficient to carry the plaintiff's burden. I would go a step further and say it was actually evidence that the plaintiff was not a Jones Act seaman. So the district court recognized this lack of evidence and correctly granted summary judgment to Cooper, and we asked this court to affirm. I'd like to address now the appellant's specific arguments on Jones Act status. The parties are in agreement that the applicable test is Saunders, Papai, and then this court's recent decision in Sanchez. And that test is, does the worker contribute to the function of a vessel or the accomplishment of his mission? That is not on appeal today. But the second element is the worker employed on a particular vessel in navigation or a fleet of vessels under common ownership that is substantial in both nature and duration? This court's recent decision in Sanchez instructs us that the analysis of these factors, and particularly the nature factor, should be rigorous to determine if an individual is truly a Jones Act seaman as opposed to a longshoreman or another type of maritime worker. It is not enough that the maritime worker is confronted with the perils of the sea. There must be a substantial, enduring relationship to a vessel under both Chandra's and Sanchez. And then when we apply this test to the evidence before the district court and before this court today, it's clear that Mr. Johnson is not a Jones Act seaman. So if we look at the duration test, Mr. Johnson argues before this court that he was a member of the crew of the America and that he spent 100% of his time working on that vessel. That's not what the evidence is in the record. To give you some context, the America is a floating weigh station, is moored midstream in the Mississippi River near Darrow. Ocean-going vessels pull up alongside it, and then barges come on underneath it, and there's a bucket dredge that, or I'm sorry, a bucket crane that then unloads the barges and puts it into the ocean-going vessel. This crane is operated by a Cooper employee who is a member of the crew of the America. The America does have crew members assigned to it on a permanent basis that operate the equipment that's on that vessel. But to aid in the loading and unloading of the ocean-going vessels and grain barges, Cooper also hires longshoremen from the local longshore union. They're hired daily for each shift, and then they're terminated at the end of that shift, and they go home. This isn't done as some sort of payroll machination or way to avoid legal liability. This is the deal, this is the agreement that Cooper has with the longshore union. And the reason why it's there is because the union members are free to work each day for the several different stevedoring operations on the river. And in fact, Mr. Johnson confirmed in his deposition that he worked for multiple stevedoring companies along the river. And that's found in the record at 175 through 176, as well as 178 and 193. In his deposition testimony, and this is important, Mr. Johnson never claimed to be a member of the crew of the America, as asserted here today, nor did he testify that he ever even worked on the America. His testimony was that his job title on the day of the accident was the operator of a front-end loader, and that required him to operate equipment in the grain barges so he could move the grain around so it could be discharged. He would be brought to the America on a crew boat, but he didn't perform any of his job functions on the America. He testified, and this is his testimony, he used the America basically as a platform to get to his work sites aboard the ocean-going vessels and the grain barges. And that's in the record at 252. And I have to stress here that when asked specifically, when you were working for Cooper, are you working on the America, he answered no. And that's in the record at 251. Mr. Johnson was truthful when he confirmed that his work was not on the America. His connection to that vessel was transitory at best. The fact that he was not a member of the crew nor ever worked on the America is confirmed by the sworn declaration of James Gautreaux, which is in the record at 87 through 90. Now, the plaintiff attempts in the brief to twist Mr. Gautreaux's testimony to state that 100% of his employment was over water. That's not the testimony, but it doesn't matter.
All right, Cooper picks him up, takes him out there. Who pays him?
He's paid. I'm not sure if Cooper pays him directly or Cooper pays him through the union.
Cooper's paying him either directly or through the union.
Yes.
Not the barge people.
No, Cooper is paying him. That's correct. Going back to the testimony that his employment was over water, I'm sorry, the argument, not the testimony, the argument that his employment was over water, the percentage of time that a worker spends over water is not the duration test. As noted by the Supreme Court in Sandra's and by this court in Sanchez, a maritime worker who unmistakably confronts the perils of the sea, often in extreme form, may still not be a seaman if there's not a substantial, enduring connection to a particular vessel or to a fleet of vessels under common ownership. The duration test is the percentage of time that a worker is employed aboard a particular vessel in navigation or a fleet of vessels under common ownership. The evidence, even Mr. Johnson's own testimony, establishes that Mr. Johnson never worked aboard the America, the vessel to which he claims an employment connection. All of his work over water was on barges or on ocean-going vessels, none of which, as confirmed by Mr. Gautreaux, were owned by Cooper. We have been unable to find any case, and the appellant does not cite a case, that stands for the proposition that is being advanced here today, which is that a worker may be a member of a crew of a vessel on which the worker performs no work. What the plaintiff is asking this court to do is unprecedented and would greatly broaden those workers eligible for Jones Act status rather than narrow the field, which was the intent of Sanchez. The district court was clearly correct in holding that Mr. Johnson did not satisfy his burden of proving duration under the Sandra's test, and that judgment
should be— You're saying the barges are not vessels?
I'm sorry?
Are you saying the barges are not vessels?
The barges are vessels. What I'm saying is that the test is that it has to be an employment connection to a particular vessel or to a fleet of vessels under common ownership. What the appellant is arguing is that his connection was to the America. What we are saying is he doesn't meet the duration aspect of that because he didn't spend at least 30% of his time working on the America. He spent no time working there.
100% of his time either on a barge or a seagoing vessel.
Exactly.
He's spending his 100% of his time on a seagoing vessel. You're just saying it's not the America.
He's spending 100% of his time as far as we know on the record, in either the barges or the seagoing vessels.
Both of which you say?
Are vessels.
Vessels.
Right. The problem is that they're not under common ownership. So they fail the common ownership aspect of the Chandra's test. So you can spend 100% of your time on a vessel, but if they're not under common ownership, or if it isn't one particular vessel, you don't meet the duration element of the Chandra's test.
So he should be suing the owner of the of these vessels, of the vessels he was on the day he was injured. Is that your position?
No, our position is that he's covered under the Longshore and Harbor Workers Compensation Act.
If he's working on vessels, that makes him a seaman, doesn't it?
No, Your Honor. What makes him a seaman is if he meets the test for seaman status under Chandra's. There are plenty of workers that you might think of as seamen because they're working on vessels. For example, a pilot, piloting a river up and down the Mississippi River. Those individuals are not Jones Act seamen. And the reason why is because they don't have a connection to any particular one vessel. They're always on different vessels. There are several categories of workers, longshoremen being one of them, who do not qualify for Jones Act seaman status under the current test as given to us by the Supreme Court.
Well, you said that the America did have permanent persons who were fixed or who clearly fit the category.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So how was Mr. Johnson's posture different from those persons?
That's a great question, Your Honor. The way that they're different is that the crew of the America actually stayed full-time upon the America, performed all their work on the America. When the America shifted in the river from one mile marker to the other, they rode on the America, and that was their permanently assigned vessel. They did not use the America simply as a platform to get to their work site. It was their work site. Mr. Johnson, in contrast, would go. What would happen is Cooper would go to the Union Yard. They would do a muster. They would tell the longshoremen where they needed to go. It may be the America. It may be someplace else. But if it were the America, Mr. Johnson would go to the America, cross over it, and then get into the barges, and that's where he performed his work. There were different barges each time, all under different ownership. He could also go on the ocean-going vessel. If he was operating as a flagger, their job is usually on the vessel itself, the ocean-going vessel, the ship. But again, these were all ships. These were all vessels that were not under common ownership. It was a different ship each time. But what makes him different from the crew of the America was that he was performing none of his job functions on the America. He was using that vessel merely as a platform. And that again, is his own testimony in the record. If I may briefly address the nature prong of the Jones Act status, because we have to look at both duration and nature. And the second element is, you know, whether he had an employment connection to a vessel, again, a particular vessel, or a fleet of vessel that was substantial in nature. Under Sanchez, this court specifically rejected the peril to sea inquiry as the sole or even the primary test in considering the nature element. And instead, there are four factors that this court set out. So I'd like to go to each one of them briefly. The first one is, does the worker owe his allegiance to the vessel or to a shoreside employer? And I think that is clear here that the allegiance is to the shoreside employer, which is Cooper, who hired him each day, who paid him either directly or through the union, and who sent him out to do his longshore job. As set out in my earlier argument, there's absolutely no evidence that Mr. Johnson owed any allegiance to any particular vessel. And he certainly didn't testify that he did. All of his work was aboard different vessels under different ownership. Mr. Johnson cannot and did not carry his burden of proof on this element. The second element is the work sea-based or involved seagoing activity? There's no evidence that Mr. Johnson was ever required to sail with the barges or the ocean-going vessels or to go out at sea. Our best case on this issue, since Ms. Post was asked about her best case, I believe our best case on this issue was a recently decided case called Moe versus Cooper Consolidated out of the Eastern District of Louisiana. The site is 601 Fed Sup 3rd 38. And in that case, Judge Ash said, looking at a very similar situation, held that the worker, also Cooper employee, a longshoreman working for Cooper, held that the individual worker was not a Jones Act seaman. He performed very similar job functions as Mr. Johnson. He did it in a midstream environment, but Judge Ash in that, I'm sorry, yes, Judge Ash in that case found that Mr. Rowe did not go out to sea and therefore did not meet the second element of the nature analysis. And then finally, the third one is the worker's assignment to a vessel limited to a performance of a discrete task, or does the worker sail with the vessel port to port, location to location? Here, the connection to the vessel that he had was the connection to the barges. He went into the holds of the barges, he helped discharge that, and then he left, went home for the day, which was his landside home. He performed, clearly, a discrete task, and after that, his connection to the vessel ended. And then the final factor, which is still relevant, is the worker exposed to the perils of the sea? This does remain a factor to consider in the Sanchez, but it wasn't briefed in the plaintiff's brief on appeal, and therefore that burden has not been carried. Considering all of this, Mr. Johnson has not carried his burden that he meets the substantial element nature of the Jones Act status test, and we would ask that the district court's judgment on this issue be confirmed. I have a few more minutes, and so I'd like to address the 905B aspect of the claim, unless your honors have any more questions about Jones Act status.
Well, just one follow-up.
Yes.
What case do you cite? I know what you're saying about his connection, these other employees on the vessel, they're there permanently, whatever. Is there a case that says his sort of hybrid category, the cumulative, could not satisfy the duration? I mean, it's an either or. I get your argument. He's different from the others who are permanent, but there's a case that says that factor could not be sustained other than being, permanently affixed, so to speak. Do you follow my question?
I do understand, Your Honor. There is no Fifth Circuit case that I'm aware of post-Sanchez that makes that distinction. There are several district court cases. There is Judge Ash's case, the Moe case that I just cited. There's a case out of the Middle District called Blanda, which was decided by Judge DeGravelis, which is cited in the briefs. There's a third case, the second, it's also called Sanchez, but it's not the same one. It's Sanchez versus American Petroleum, I believe. It was the Judge Barbier case out of the Eastern District. It's also cited in the brief.
What about pre-Sanchez?
Well, pre-Sanchez, there are several cases that are pre-Sanchez that talk about longshoremen in the context of, do they meet the nature element of the Chandra's test? But in those cases, and I don't have any to cite to you off the top of my head, Judge Richmond, but those cases were operating on the nature side. They were operating under a lesser standard because pre-Sanchez, the standard only was, is the worker exposed to the perils of the sea? One of the reasons why this court en banc decided Sanchez was because it found that that singular inquiry was insufficient to determine seaman status because it was not in accordance with Chandra's or Papai. And that's the reason why Sanchez was decided overruling some of those previous cases and setting forth the more stringent elements that you find now in Sanchez, which are the four, it's now a four element test as opposed to a single element test. But in response to your specific question, I don't have a case to cite to you that specifically considers this issue pre-Sanchez.
If Sanchez gives, a list of factors, mm-hmm. is it the upshot, a balancing of, a weighing of those factors, so to speak, every case different, da-da-da. You heard my question about summary judgment. So if it's a weighing, balancing in this context, and given the non-movement, taking what you say is true, but is it dicey in this summary judgment context, or is it, you're just saying, well, as a matter of law, no matter what the facts are, he's not a seaman?
It's a great question, Judge Stewart. In some of those cases I cited to, particularly Blanda and the second Sanchez case, both Judge DeGravelis and Judge Barbier kind of struggled with this idea, are the four elements set out by Sanchez mandatory? In other words, do you have to tick each one of them? in order to meet the nature element, or are they weighing factors? I believe Judge Ash in his Moe decision weighed them, and Judge DeGravelis and Judge Barbier didn't have to really decide that issue because the worker in those two cases ticked all four of those elements. I personally believe reading Sanchez that it is a weighing test, that is not necessary to meet all of those elements, that instead the district court may weigh the evidence and make that decision. But I also believe that the evidence in front of the court, the district court, and in front of this court today in this record does not support Jones Act status, either on the nature or the duration aspect. In that respect, I believe the district court correctly decided this issue. I only have about 20 seconds left, so I would just say I would also ask the court in looking at whether or not the 905B elements have been met we would just rest on our brief there, but we do not believe there's only two duties that the plaintiff alleges that we violated: the turnover duty and then the control duty. But the important thing there is that there is no evidence, there's no argument that there was ever a defect on the vessel to support either, and by the vessel I mean the America, to support either. My time is up. Thank you.
I think that Mr. Johnson is clearly one of these types of employees who falls within this sort of zone of uncertainty. But if you look back at Chandra's, what is the real connection? Does it say you have to be on a vessel all of the time? No, it says you have to contribute to the function of the vessel or the accomplishment of its mission and have a relationship that is substantial in terms of duration and nature. I would submit to you, Mr. Johnson contributes to the function or mission of the vessel as much as, if not more so, than some of the regular crew members. The America does not transit. It is not moved all of the time. So these crew members that they admit that they have are not really performing a whole lot of additional functions anyway. Mr. Johnson is not on the America when it's moved, which there's no evidence in the record of how often it's moved or how it's moved. He is sort of a hybrid employee, and that's what happens when you move these people from the context of going from shoreside to going out into the middle of the river. He mentioned pilots. Pilots are transitory. Their relation to vessels is something. They get off one, they get on one. And I would submit to you that Mr. Johnson's relation to the barges and the ships is what's transitory. His relation to the America is what's constant. And the fact that he's hired as what they term in their brief, they have 406 versus non-406 employees and regular crew members versus these day workers, you can call them whatever you want. But when you're taking them out on a vessel to a vessel and exposing them to the perils of the sea, then they're a seaman.
Response to opposing counsel saying that Mr. Johnson's own testimony says that he only used the America as a platform and that he did not work actually on that vessel?
Well, no one is really doing the work or the mission of the vessel from the vessel, because the very mission of and job of the America is to provide a location from which to move things from the other vessels that are more
that alongside. Was evidence of what you're arguing now submitted in response to the summary judgment motion?
Yes, it's in my client's deposition, which is all in the record, is exactly what he did. All of the equipment and everything when they go out to the America that's used to load and unload the barges and the ships comes from the America. The only person on the America physically participating in the operation of what they deem their regular crew would be the crane operator, because he's got to pick up and move these covers and move all of the equipment. And the employees like my client, they're on the America, but then they're on the barges and on the ship rigging and doing these other things. It's no different from a towboat that has barges that it's moving up or down the river. The deckhands on the barges, they're out working on the tow all the time. Does it mean they're not connected to the towboat? Of course not. Does it mean they're not a crew member? Of course not. They're using their main boat's equipment to go out and do work and to pick up barges and drop off barges. So it's really very much the same thing. They may be performing the work on other vessels, but the vessel they're attached to, the vessel they go to every day, that is the constant. And it's no different in Mr. Johnson's case, except for the America's not going up and down the river like a towboat. But a towboat's picking up different barges and dropping off barges all the time, and its crew goes and works on those for the vast majority of the time. That's what they're there to do. So it's really not any different at all. The duration, the time spent on the vessel, again, it's the furtherance of the mission of the vessel and the contribution to the function and mission of the vessel. It's not that you're on the vessel all the time. If it were, then these deckhands, in my example, they wouldn't be Jones Act seamen either. And we all know that they are.
What else is in the record on these points besides Mr. Johnson's deposition? Just give me a 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's really just his deposition and the affidavit that was submitted. I think there are two affidavits submitted by the appellee in there was opposition to the summary judgment. There is no other evidence. He did what he did.
But you're conceding that the deckhands on the America are Jones Act seamen.
Yes, they are, of course. All of the regular crew on any vessel are Jones Act seamen. But you have supplemental type crew members or these hybrid crew members, to use Judge Stewart's word, that are like Mr. Johnson, who may perform jobs on other things, but they're still, that's their vessel. And again, you get back to my towboat analogy, or vessels that do fleet work in the river. People work on the fleet boat, but they're off moving around the barges all of the time. Or dredges. They have, you know, dredges, people work on the dredge, and then they have different barges that they pump onto. They still attach to the dredge, no matter what their duty requires them to be on other vessels for. If there are no other questions, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
That will conclude the argument.